This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Boy, a number of things going on here tonight. Call in now and respond to that interview with Philippe Senderos. Now, you know what's really impressive right there? Did you hear him at the end? He was selling the Houston Dynamo. And that, to me, was very, very impressive, amongst all the other things Philippe talked about. But it was impressive that he's aware of what's going on Saturday. He's aware that the stadium's not full. He's aware that he wants to be somebody, when he comes into these interview situations, a guy that's going to help promote his team. That's all in. You got to love that. You got to love that. And I do think sometimes players in Major League Soccer forget. There was once a time people didn't really care that much about professional soccer. And in some markets, it's exploding. And in others, it still takes work. Your best asset as a professional soccer team are your players. The more they can touch people in your community, the better it is. So when people tuned in tonight to hear Philippe Senderos, a guy who played in the Champions League, played in World Cups, speaking this serious, this committed, and this knowledgeable about the Houston Dynamo in this city, that's impressive. That was a 30-minute commercial for the Houston Dynamo brought to you by Philippe Senderos and Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, of course, because we're the platform. We're the fulcrum. 713-780-3776. Let me shoot Jose. We have a soundbite, Wilmer Cabrera, on Tomas Martinez being a number 10 for the Houston Dynamo, being that playmaker. Don't have that one? Okay, we'll get that one in a few minutes. But he came out and spoke about that. Now, the real question is, how much of the Dynamo tactically has to be altered in order for Tomas Martinez to get more of the ball? What changes have to occur to help him succeed as a number 10? Because there was frustration at the end of last year from Tomas Martinez not getting on the ball. Also, at the beginning of the show, we broke an article from ESPN Deportes that Kubo Torres, this was an article, ESPN Deportes. I posted it up at Facebook Soccer Matters. You can go over there. You can hit me up on Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. But over there, there is an article in Spanish that says that Eric Kubo Torres is very close to signing with UNAM Pumas. Whether this is true or not, I don't know. We sent out a message to Dynamo General Manager Matt Jordan. I think I'm looking at my texts right now. He may have responded. Did not respond to the Kubo to Pumas thing, Matt, but he did say he can come in studio tomorrow. So looks like we'll have Matt Jordan in studio tomorrow night, which is great. So, Matt, if you're listening, we appreciate that. So we'll have Dynamo General Manager in here. We're going to address a number of things with him tomorrow, the building of this team, how this continues on, some of the deals that have been made, and then specific issues with Kubo Torres, Tyler Derrick, a young talent that's training with the Dynamo now, Palomino. So a lot of good issues to talk about tomorrow with Dynamo General Manager Matt Jordan. So there you go. 713-780-3776 is the number. 713-780-3776 is the number to call in here tonight. Not reporting to preseason in Major League Soccer, Kyle Larin of Orlando, who's at Beşiktaş in Turkey. Remember way back when Joe Ngwenya was on the Houston Dynamo? And he ended up going to Turkey, and it was kind of like, where in the world is Joseph Ngwenya? Look, players are always trying, in many cases, to ply their trade in Europe at times. Sonny at RSL, he didn't show up. Lee Wynn at New England with a new manager in Brad Friedel. 713-780-3776. React to the Philippe Senderos interview. New York City FC's David Villa is determined to make Spain's World Cup squad. He's now 36 years of age. Had a three-year absence. In 2017, he did get another cap. 98 appearances for Spain, 59 goals for David Villa with La Roja. Roberto Mancini is a leading candidate to become Australia's head coach, according to News Corp. It would be one of those short-term deals that he would do. All right, let's go to Alicia, who wants to speak about Arsenal. Hopefully I'll get the right pronunciation. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Glenn.
How do you pronounce your name, Elijah, by the way? How do you pronounce your name?
Elijah.
Elijah. Okay, got it.
Yeah, well, I wanted to talk about, I'm an Arsenal fan. I'm so happy about the result against Chelsea today. But I'm pretty sure you've heard, you know, we're rumored to get Aubameyang, just like how Arsenal's rumored to get everyone. And also, they're also rumored to get Johnny Evans. Do you think that if Arsenal could pull this off in this window, you know, with us losing Sanchez, Walcott, and Coughlin, do you think that would be good, you know, for Arsenal to help their chances in the top four?
Oh, boy. I think some of this is precipitated by business, obviously. We call it Kroenke FC, right, because Stan Kroenke is the American owner, and we've seen kind of what has happened with the Colorado Rapids over the years in Major League Soccer. I mean, look, and I don't want to bang on people, but if and clubs, but if there is a group of teams in MLS that needs a spit shine and some excitement around it, Colorado is certainly an organization that does need that. I think this all depends on how players integrate in, right? You got rid of you got a guy and you got value for a guy in Sanchez who definitely wanted to leave. You can't keep people around that aren't a part of the cause. You got Mkhitaryan. How is he going to fit in? How is Aubameyang going to fit in if, in fact, they get him? Johnny Evans is a seasoned defender. I think we still go back to the question of a team that's never replaced a hard man in midfield in Patrick Vieira, right? I mean, sometimes it stuns me that such obvious areas of parts of teams that need to be addressed aren't. Simone Mignolet in goal for Liverpool, right? Finally, they do bring in Virgil van Dijk, and they've got a defender now that can help maybe tip the balance of such an attack-oriented team. And by the way, Liverpool lost to Swansea. For all you Liverpool fans, it's so obvious why this whole, you know, people are, I can't understand how they lose to Swansea and some of these lower-end teams. It's pretty simple. If you watch these games, they struggle to break down deeper defending teams, and that's what lower-end and mid-table teams in the Premier League are going to do to Liverpool because they can't match their talent. It's the open games that they thrive in. But deep defending teams, they struggle. So to answer your question, I can't really answer your question on Arsenal. It's a lot of what ifs. It's a lot of new players adapting. It can go in a lot of different directions. New, fresh players can bring a lot of optimism and possibility and excitement. That's really what I could say, Elijah. You know, we're talking about players that are top quality players that would be coming to Arsenal. How quickly did they adapt and how quickly do they get into an Arsenal system? I will say in the case of Mkhitaryan, it's a freer system for him. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, because, you know, Mourinho, he's just like a, you know, they always, you know, the song, Park the Bus, Man United, you know, he didn't really sit well under there. I think it'll suit him here because, you know, Wenger, he you know, with Arsenal, like, we're always good on attack. You know, we score goals. It's just our problem's been defense. I think he's going to thrive here, which, you know, I mean, you know, he couldn't, but still, I think he's going to have a good time here. And, you know, if we get Aubameyang, you know, what Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang did in Dortmund was, you know, magical. So if they could bring that here and somehow replicate it, that'd be awesome. But like you said, what if?
Yeah, I mean, this is the beautiful intrigue about the movement. Although I get tired of how much movement there is all the time, and loyalty's not a factor anymore for professional soccer players in a lot of cases when they're moved on, and it's not for organizations either. It is a problem, and that's why when you see guys that have remained with one club loyally, it is very impressive. If you flip that and then you say Alexis going to Manchester United, you mentioned how pragmatic Mourinho is. How is he going to fit in there? That's going to be pretty interesting. Who's going to be sacrificed with some of the attacking talent that Manchester United has for the playing time that ultimately Alexis Sanchez is going to get? So I think it's very interesting to watch how quickly these guys can integrate into teams. It does make it intriguing. They do bring an air of freshness to teams. And both these clubs in Arsenal and Manchester United are going to look to get a spike in a platform off these high-profile signings and high-profile players. It's all I can say, Elijah.
Yeah, and it's so frustrating because, you know, Arsenal, they charge the most for a ticket to go to a game. They have all this money saved up in their club, and they don't use it. It's like they penny pinch. Like, if you hear it, like I've read, I don't know if it's true, but their offer for Aubameyang is $50.9 million. Aubameyang, to me, he's still a world-class striker. Like Coutinho, you know, he went to Barcelona for $140 million. So $50.9 million, that's a bargain. And if they're asking for Giroud on a six-month loan, I don't know why.
Yeah, it's hard to.
Like, Arsenal don't want to pay $10 million extra pounds for that.
You know, they probably, you know, the way they're doing their business, that comes down to their ownership. And as much as you want the criteria to be different, they're going to tell you we're a money-making machine. We sell our games out. We're selling jerseys. Let the good times roll. You know, Stan Kroenke's the owner. I don't know how much he knows about the Premier League. I don't know how much he knows about Arsenal and their history. I'm sure he does now. If you remember, Ivan Gazidis is a part of Arsenal, too, who's in the front office of Major League Soccer. But that withstanding, you know, the criteria for ownership is different than it is for fans sometimes, as much as fans want it to be different. Look at Chelsea. They don't seem to be splashing out the money they once were. But the whole, you know, it's hard to understand the value of a soccer player now because you got billionaires throwing ridiculously stupid money out there. It's hard to figure out sometimes. There is no real bar. It's limitless what people can spend on people, and they're overpaying for people. And it makes it very difficult to kind of understand, and it makes it difficult for certain teams to operate amongst this type of freewheeling spending. Listen, I'm up on a hard break. Elijah, thank you very much for the phone call tonight. I do appreciate it very much. Dylan, stick with us. We're going to try to get to you. I may have to go to our guests right away when we come back, but do stick with us. We do want to hear from you, Dylan. I don't think there's any question because you are the one and only Dylan. Jürgen Damm, by the way, was arrested in Mexico. We have a few more details on that. We did mention that Kubo Torres, there is a report out, ESPN Deportes. I posted the article that he could be going to Unam Pumas in Mexico. That's an interesting one with Kubo because it's obvious that over the last couple of years, he's been definitely shopped. I don't think there's any question about that. And then you have to wonder where the mentality of a player is with the knowledge that you are being shopped. So that's one to think about. By the way, Kubo Torres last year broke the single-season scoring record. All right, we'll take a break here. As we go to break here, a quick reminder here for Kings Court. Soccer fans, a real soccer pub in Edo, Kings Court, right next to the stadium at 903 Hutchins. 13 TVs down there, giant big screens. The Kings Court shows the Premier League, La Liga, Champions League. My good friend Tom Clare and the Houston Reds, the Manchester United supporters group, they watch games there. So does the Chelsea supporters group. 24 taps, full bar at Kings Court, great food. Get over to Kings Court. Got a wonderful rooftop deck that sits in the shadows of BBVA Compass Stadium. It's your place to go before and after Dynamo games. Say hello to Jay, KingsCourtTX.com, and we will take a break here. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5.
Ozil in the center. Xhaka! Just like that! The deflected cross and Arsenal are ahead! Granit Xhaka!
Sané. Still going, Sané. Here's Aguero! It's a hat-trick for the man who never fails against Newcastle. And they rush as one to the impeccable Sané to congratulate and thank him for teeing up the chance. It's his 11th hat-trick for Manchester City.
Welcome back to Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. As we roll on here tonight, one of the hot topics has been IDing the Hispanic player in our country. Lot to talk about in that area. Before we get to Brad Rothenberg of Sueño Alianza, just a quick word here for Carlsberg. Carlsberg reminds you that they're probably the best beer in the world. And it's time now for the Carlsberg Team of the Week. We're going to give it to Swansea for the 1-0 win over Liverpool because of its historic nature. I'm not necessarily a fan of defending deep. I understand why teams have to do it in the Premier League. This week, we're going to give it to the Swans. Swansea at the bottom of the Premier League table, knocking off Liverpool 1-0. Carlsberg, probably the best beer in the world. Our thanks to Carlsberg and Clay Cavillion. All right, we bring on now Brad Rothenberg of Sueño Alianza. Brad, thank you for coming on the show.
Glenn, thanks for having me.
All right, so the first thing, I want the Cliff Notes version of what Sueño Alianza is for my listeners.
Well, it's I can give you the Cliff Notes version because I don't have any longer version. It's an open tryout for Latino kids who want to be seen by scouts at MLS, Liga MX, the Mexican Federation, and from time to time, the U.S. Soccer Federation.
How many of these events do you do throughout the year? And I know you do them all over the country. And have you ever done one in Houston? And will you do more in Houston?
Yeah, actually, we've done them in Houston for the last 8 years. We do work with the Dynamo pretty closely. It's one of the good MLS relationships we have. We've been doing them in 11 cities all over the country since 2007. We see about 8,000-9,000 kids a year. And as I said, it's open tryouts. So the wild majority of those kids are there for fun, and they know from the minute they get on the field that they're never going to make it to the final round. But we come to Houston, we have this open tryout on a Saturday. We have all these scouts on the sideline. They pick the best 20 in two different age groups, and on Sunday, those kids will play against the Dynamo Academy or another academy locally so that the scouts can see what these kids who just hopped on the field look like against, you know, a barometer against a qualified team.
What is the main goal of Sueño Alianza? Is it to affiliate them with professional soccer teams? What is it?
Really, the goal was the same from day one as it is today, and it's really to give Latino soccer players an opportunity to be seen by scouts, by college scouts and pro scouts, to live their dreams and make soccer a part of their life, part of their future. We don't have an agenda related to where they end up playing. We're very happy if MLS and an academy, MLS Academy wants them, or another DA, or if they end up in Mexico. Some have ended up in Honduras, Colombia, Costa Rica as well. We simply want to give these kids an opportunity to be seen because we think the Federation has not been doing a good enough job giving them that opportunity.
All right, and that's the hot button topic. So tell me, before we get into that, just tell me, where does this organization, where does Sueño Alianza lie? I mean, obviously, it's wonderful that you're gaining these young men exposure. Is there a profit in this? Is this you know, what type of business is this?
Well, it is a for-profit business. We have a foundation that helps kids get to college. That's nonprofit, mm-hmm. but it is a for-profit business. But we rely on the corporate sponsors we bring into the business. There's no fee to try out because we simply don't want to continue this barrier to entry.
Right.
We're not player agents. So if a kid ends up like Jonathan Gonzalez, his father is his agent. We didn't take a fee when he signed with Monterey, et cetera. And our position there is we've really tried to become this bridge for the Latino community. And if they saw us as taking these kids and, quote, exploiting them like an agent would, they'd be suspicious of our motives. So we've always relied on corporate sponsorships, and that's really been our driving force for the business. It's not a great business. We only got to profitability a few years ago, but it's a good enough business that we can continue doing it and giving these kids an opportunity.
All right, so you're quoted extensively. Hugo Perez is, also Hercules Gomez. Look, we know there's things that can improve. I don't think there's any question. But the headline of this article is The Old Boys Club, How U.S. Soccer Ignores Talented Players from Underserved Communities. Is that a fair headline?
You know, it's a little dramatic because I think, yes, I don't know that they absolutely ignore these kids, because the fact is Jonathan Gonzalez, who's the hot topic right now, was known by U.S. Soccer. They didn't ignore him entirely. They just didn't treat him with the kind of respect and attention that a kid like that had earned. And I don't mean some kind of fawning respect. And I don't blame, for instance, Tab Ramos has been held to the fire on this. It's not Tab's fault. It's not his fault that he's the only coach that the Federation has put in place that has a cultural sensitivity to the Latino player that speaks Spanish. He's the under 20 coach. He's got a full-time
job. Stop right there, because I think you just said something incredibly important. Culturally sensitive. Now, to me, that's the biggest issue. I know people are going to try to turn this into racial, which I don't buy that at all. I think that's people
me
looking.
Either.
I think that's totally people looking to prop themselves up. I would call them a media, you know what, disgusting. Okay, I don't think it's that. I think one of the biggest issues, and you correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm a guy that spent 12 years in player development. You and I discussed that because I wanted you to know that I do have experience with this, and I've picked kids up in rough areas of Houston, dropped them off. They didn't even have lights around their apartment complexes because I knew the importance of integrating them into a youth soccer club. But what you just said, sensitivity, I'm going to take that even further. That is, yes, an understanding of the culture, the challenges of integrating these players. But do our coaches in this country, are they schooled in that area? Because in order to be culturally sensitive means you have to spend a tremendous amount of time with these players. And sometimes I think in the youth community, it's not about spending a lot of time with people. It's not about understanding them. And maybe some of our coaches are just ill-equipped. I'm going to look at the Houston Dynamo. They're full, and I'm not saying the coaches are ill-equipped, but I'm bringing up a point here. These youth teams for the Houston Dynamo have tons of technically proficient Hispanic players, yet only one player has come through the system. What's wrong?
Well, you picked up on the language I use, which is culturally sensitive, because I don't think it's absolutely a race issue. It's about the Federation defining what they're looking for in a player and finding those coaches that know how to look for that.
Know how to look for it, they have to be able to work with those kids.
Yes.
Okay? And that's a little bit different when it comes to developing a soccer player that has... plays the game differently. Culturally, it's differently. I mean, you got to commit time to that player. I'm not sure everybody in the way this youth community is built now wants to commit that time, because it's easier to just get, players that you don't have to spend that type of time on. They're going to pay their fees and they're going to come to the club.
You're right. And that's been our pattern, but it hasn't resulted in the success at the youth national team levels that we want. It's a roller coaster for us. We qualify, we don't qualify. We miss a couple of U-17 World Cups. We miss the U-20. We miss the Olympics a couple of times. That shouldn't be the pattern. What you identify, when you describe that you go into the communities, you're like the Bob Bradleys of the world. He did the same thing. But that's because the system isn't there to serve you. We have this, you know, the battle in politics is states' rights versus the federalist powers. Same thing happens here. U.S. soccer needs to serve the local youth clubs, the development academies, even the MLS teams, by doing more in this community to establish a criteria that they're looking for in these kids and these players, and let the coaches do their jobs with the help from the federation. The federation takes a couple of bucks, you know, a buck off a youth player and a couple of bucks off of an affiliated player, and they put it in their coffers. They need to start putting that money back in the community. And as, you know, this U.S. soccer election is going on, I'm very interested in hearing which of the candidates are talking about those kinds of activities, and I don't hear enough of it.
How much of this is about just the aggressiveness of Mexican clubs to find players and looking at the U.S. and saying, hey, you know what, this is fertile fishing ground. I know there's formal and informal scouts all over this city of Houston, and I know they're all over the U.S. seeking out players. And they may covet, you know, a Hispanic player in that style of play a heck of a lot more than we may do in the United States.
Yes. Well, look, here's a good anecdote. Besides the, you know, the Jonathan Gonzalez story gets a lot of headlines, but Alianza has found we have 8 kids that are playing in the Pachuca youth development system. Every one of those kids, if you give you their numbers, you could ask them yourself, would love to be playing in the United States for a club or an academy here, but they either it didn't work out or they had their best option to develop was in Mexico. But that could be a very good thing for the United States until MLS is more mature and more ready to really institute a program where youth players are playing on the first team, and I think they'll get there. We should be happy when a Mexican club like Monterrey or Pachuca or America takes one of our kids and develops them the way they did Jonathan. What we can't do as a federation is fail to maintain a close working relationship with those kids, or we will lose them the way we lost Jonathan. And I know there's a boy or two at Pachuca, because I'm close to Marco Garces, who runs the Pachuca Academy, who tells me that there's a couple of kids he's got who are potential dual citizens, and they're a step behind Jonathan. And I know we're not in touch with them as a federation. It will change if we have the right president in the federation. But if it's status quo, we're going to be enduring this problem for a long time.
Brad Rothenberg, Sueño Alianza, joining us. All right, so let's go back to Jonathan Gonzalez, because that's part of the story. It's not the whole story, because players are going to come and go. They're going to be lost. You're not going to keep everybody. It's just like Major League Soccer. You're going to have guys going over to Europe, and you know what? That's not a bad thing. It's going to happen. But let's go back to his case, because my understanding is that U.S. Soccer worked with him a lot. He was on youth national teams. They valued him. There was a lot of contact with Todd Ramos. There was contact with Bruce Arena, Dave Sarakin, and that Mexico really came into the game here a little bit later after his growth at Monterrey. So could this been more of a case of the United States falling asleep at the wheel here and, you know, having the bacon stolen out from under their nose as opposed to, you know, a different type of negligence maybe that you know?
I think that you're... Let's be clear about what I've learned. Dave did not contact Jonathan when he didn't include him in November. Part of what was almost the final straw for Jonathan was that nobody told him why he was left off that roster. But before that, I don't think Jonathan had an expectation that he would be, at his young age, be brought onto the U-20 World Cup team. Although he was calling and Tab did keep contact with him. But he was left off the U-17 team, and he should have been included, in my opinion. But the interaction between the coaches there was not in person. Nobody flew to Monterrey to see him. It's pretty easy to get from, say, Chicago or Houston to Monterrey. Nobody saw him play. Yet Osorio saw him play twice. And that was part of what impressed Jonathan. Furthermore, Tab did stay in touch with Jonathan, but through text messages. Bruce never did. We did not do what we needed to do. And, putting it on Tab is not the right message here. Tab is a coach. The Federation needs a program in place to talk to every kid. I don't care if they're Latino, Black American, white. They need to have a better program to maintain close relationships with every kid. They have the money. They simply need the will.
Yeah,
and then
so
this won't happen again.
This to me, with your help here and with other information, this to me sounds like it was a player that was coveted. The guard was dropped. Better communication could have been made. Then the only other thing that I see is here, how much of this, if any, is it about the U.S. not qualifying for a World Cup and Mexico qualifying for the World Cup and Jonathan Gonzalez a potential to go to the World Cup with Mexico? Because, look,
people
are jumping all the time to be with the team that's going to the big dance.
Yeah. And Jonathan will say that that was – it was never – nothing promised because I was with – I was with Dennis the week of Christmas in Mexico, and I was with some other administrators. They made no promises like that. Osorio wouldn't make a promise like that. But the fact that they are going and that the Federation had deep interest for them, and they laid out a plan for other youth national team opportunities that they would extend to him. He's going to be announced tomorrow. I think the paperwork is finalized. He's going to be announced as a, going to San Antonio to play in their game against
Bosnia.
And of course that played a role here, that Jonathan realized he was, you know, I think he's, my numbers are right, he has played more minutes for of any kid under 20 at any first division club in the world this year, and the kid is peaking. You know, hopefully he's got a better, he's going to be great in a few years too, but right now he is really hitting his stride, and the opportunities that Mexico presents are better than our opportunities, and that's a simple fact. But we could overcome that. Jonathan wanted to play in the U.S. up until this fall, and then his head got turned. That's life, but we can overcome that with better ongoing maintenance and communication.
All right, so again, Brad Rothenberg, Sueño Alianza. It's a fascinating conversation. Is a less than defined look. When you look at Mexico, you know what is valued as a footballer down there. It's pretty clear. They have a pretty defined purpose of play, and they have a very defined love of certain aspects. If you can't control the ball, you can't pass the ball. You're not a footballer in Mexico. Okay, so is a less than defined purpose of play that we have here in the United States? If that's what we believe, is that part of the problem here when it comes to integrating differing players,
Probably know. Sorry.
Yeah, no, Hispanic players.
I think you're probably, because of your history, you know more about that than I do. But my instinct is, and that's a subtle aspect of this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, most Latino players, and I've heard only anecdotes. You know that. A youth national team coach in the U.S. always tells the kid to, you know, they're emphasizing one touch. Don't hold the ball. Don't play with the ball. Move it forward. And that's simply not the style that a lot of these kids watch on TV when they're watching Liga MX or play with their friends. So there's part of that. But the bottom line, too, is these kids are young kids who were born and raised here in the United States, the Jonathan Gonzalez's of the world. And it wasn't that they left. We lost them. The style of play is secondary, in my opinion. You know, I think that if these kids are brought onto a system and the coaches and the system are open to alternative styles and blending the uniqueness of our country's soccer players, that won't be an issue for long. But right now it is one of those issues.
So when I look at the national team, there are a lot of Mexican Americans that have gone through the U.S. national team. There's not as many dual Mexican Americans that have kind of gone to Mexico like you're talking about with Jonathan Gonzalez. Okay, so I'm going to mention names: Alvarado, Arriola, Castillo, Corona, Garza, Gonzalez, two Gonzalezes, Jesse and Omar, Orozco, Torres, Villafana, Yarbrough. So from the perspective of our U.S. national team in the last half dozen years, we certainly have had more Hispanic players, but this is more of a grassroots thing to you, right?
It is. And I still think, you mentioned players, but need, you know, multiply that times 10. We need to have so many players. Part of what's, I think, worked in Mexico, but around the world is, you know, for, if you take their team that won the under 17 World Cup or the Olympic gold, they succeeded, and obviously a lot of those, more than a handful, are going to be in Russia on the senior team. But they succeed because at every position, we had one Michael Bradley peaking for the last decade. We need four Michael Bradleys behind him, nipping at his heels. And so if you can list the dozen or so elite Latino players, but we need 50 of them. We need, and to use it, I don't have a better term than this, but we need a cache of players, Latino, Anglo, Black American, that are so elite. And it only can start, it has to happen at the youth level, and the Federation has to help these, not the development academies exclusively, but they have to help all these youth clubs grow their user base, grow their membership. The membership's actually been declining in the last 6 or 7 years, it's gone down to almost 20%. Participation has to go up. Membership has to increase fourfold. And that's going to be by including new talent, new styles. And that's how we succeed. And they can seed the senior teams.
So, Brad, back to this article by Kevin McCauley. Hugo Perez is quoted in there. Hercules Gomez is quoted in there. By the way, Juan Carlos Mejia for many years was the Lone Ranger for U.S. soccer, going into these communities, dating back to when I was involved on player development side. Look, there's one thing that certainly emanates out of these guys, and I think it's without a doubt important. We need the best coaches, but we do need more coaches with a Latin background involved at all levels of the sport in this country. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and it's one of the unique things about U.S. soccer is it's a bottom-up organization, but in this case, we need it from the top down. We need the federation at the most senior levels to talk, to instruct, to create the style and the determination of what they're looking for, so that then when they employ Latino coaches or culturally sensitive coaches, they know what to do with them. But if you bring a kid into a system and there's nowhere, there isn't a place for him to feel, to see a path to the future, it's sure to lose anyway.
So do you think this article was a little bit over the top, a little bit too... I don't know.
Well, I don't. I heard from some senior level U.S. soccer people that over the top was exactly how it was described to me.
Yeah.
But I know it's been 10 years of me sitting on my hands and muzzling myself while we continue to do this work with Alianza and watch these kids float in and out of the established affiliated youth organizations with nowhere else to go when they left.
Could you and U.S. Soccer work together on this? I mean, because they've come to your events, right?
I'd love to.
Haven't they come to a ton of your events? They've been present, haven't they?
They've been. Well, you mentioned Juan Carlos Mejia. Yes, he's been present. Here and there, they show up, but they never send someone senior. And I can tell you that they formally declined to continue with us through a letter they sent in 2016, saying that they've never found any talent. Which, for them, that's true. Now, at the same time, Mexican teams took 51 kids, and three kids have played on youth national teams for them, and Jonathan's about to play on their senior team. So they haven't been.
But couldn't
that? And frankly, they should have been doing this before.
Right? Couldn't that be emblematic of the fact that we have to look at identifying soccer players as good soccer players in a different way?
Yes, exactly. And it has to start with the Federation deciding to do it. But the fact is, we shouldn't be in business doing this stuff. We should be all, I should have been working in a whole different environment, because U.S. soccer should have been doing this long before I arrived on the scene. This should be a U.S. soccer run program. And I've brought it to their attention repeatedly, and they've declined to do anything more with us. So my business partner always asks if he wants me to put, if he's going to, when he's going to put the padded walls in my room, because I continually wanted to talk to U.S. soccer, and banging my head against the wall and getting no was never satisfying. So I always called and called and called, but I never got anywhere.
I think this is all a healthy conversation. I think with the change in leadership in U.S. soccer, and, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of good change, and nobody's going to diss on what's happened before. There's been a lot of great things done. But I think this is all a healthy conversation. I do think the needle needs to be moved back towards player development, grassroots, the sport itself. Now, in your case, you know, some people might say, hey, look, Sueño Alianza, they're all about just supplying players to Mexican pro teams. Is that fair to say?
It's not what we're all about. It's what we're about by default. And in fairness, I mentioned the Dynamo. FC Dallas, from the very beginning, also has been really supportive of our program. Yep. And in every city where we do this, where there's an MLS team now, MLS has come out to support us. It took them a while to get on board, whereas the Mexican clubs, you know, will send their coaches at their own expense to fly in and see these kids because they know that we're doing the hard work for them. But MLS is right on board with it, too. The U.S. Soccer Federation is not, and that's disappointing. Doesn't really matter, but as a result, we are more of a Mexican-focused program because we're totally agnostic, open to everybody. Whoever the numbers, the people that show up, are the Mexicans. So there's nothing more I can do.
What about the Salvadorians and Hondurans?
When we were in D.C., we had the Salvadoran Federation participate, but the numbers just are, you know, our numbers are 60-something percent Mexican-American kids playing. But the Colombian Federation also has brought a couple of kids, and including they did a reality show searching for great Colombian kids out of the United States, and they did a six-part TV show down in Colombia. So there's been other interest from other federations, but Mexico is by far the most interested.
Brad,
and by the way,
yes,
whether it's with us or someone else, they're not going to stop. They're coming here and coming here big. So we need to, our federation needs to get on board now, and I hope you're right. I mean, I think there are some candidates better than others, but I sure hope the right candidate takes the reins and changes the system.
Brad, that's your last word because I'm up on a hard break. Listen, this was a great conversation. I appreciate you making it a conversation and not just a PR piece. Your passion is definitely there. I do thank you very much for coming on. We can do more of this sometime in the future, okay?
That sounds great.
All right.
Thanks very much, Glenn.
Yeah, great job. Thank you.
Take care.
That's Brad Rothenberg and Sueño Alianza. Big hot topic issue and great conversation and debate there. Going to have to shut it down here tonight. I'm sorry I didn't get to you, Dylan. My thanks to Jose Partida. We have been on Facebook Live here tonight. Real quick, as we break out tonight, 713-780-3776, the ninth caller is going to get this Philippe Senderos signed soccer ball. And we got some late-breaking news here, I think. What is this? Record in Mexico. Saw newspaper in Mexico? There's a newspaper in Mexico saying that the deal is imminent for Kubo Torres to go to UNAM Pumas. So that's what we sign off with here tonight. Torres apparently is in Mexico City tonight. So official announcement likely to come tomorrow. That's big news. That'll do it tonight. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. We end up on a big note there. Looks like Kubo Torres is going to be a player for UNAM Pumas.